Okay. Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it. My name is Tony Renzi. I'm a shareholder at Vedder Price. And first, I'd like to thank Nicholas and the Capital Link team for putting on this fabulous event today. It's been a wonderful day so far. And DNV. And it's been a wonderful day so far. And we're looking forward to the rest of the afternoon. As you can see from the title, we're going to talk about investing in the shipping industry and looking at individual sectors within the industry. What I'll do is I'll do a brief introduction of the panelists, and then I'll turn it over to them, give a few minutes on themselves and their company. So we have Christian Sintos, who's an investment professional at BlackRock. John Hsu is founder, president, and CEO of Erasmus Ship Invest Group. Christian Reachley is head of shipping at MPC Capital and chief operating officer at MPC Container Ships ASA. Andrew Hampson is chief executive officer of Tufton Investment Management. So, Christian, if you want to just do a few seconds on your bio and your company.
Yeah, sure. Good afternoon, everyone. MPC Capital is an investment and asset manager focusing on infrastructure on the maritime and the energy side. Probably here in Oslo, best known as the initiator of MPC Container Ships, a company which we have built from scratch in 2017, 2018, and developed over time into the leading provider of feeder container ships. And yeah, I think that's...
Good afternoon, everyone. Christian Sintos. I'm part of BlackRock's infrastructure investment group. We make investments in both assets as well as businesses in the broader infrastructure space across a number of different end markets. That's energy, transportation and logistics, but also digital infrastructure as well as waste and water infrastructure. So quite a diversified mandate. The maritime space and shipping is very much part of our mandate, but we can't do the exciting stuff that a lot of you in the room do, the sort of, you know, riding cycles. We're on the sort of the more boring end of the spectrum. We look for downside protection through charter contracts. We look for quality operating partners, and of course we need to be happy with the macro and have conviction in the macro of the end markets that we're investing in. So we're coming at sort of shipping in the maritime space more from an infrastructure fund mindset. We have made a number of investments, just to name a few, in the space. Back in the day in 2014 now, so more than 10 years ago, we set up a partnership with a company called Petrofac to invest in the FPSO space. With the assets being based in Southeast Asia. Much more recently, in 2021, we took private GasLog and created a partnership with the founding shareholders there. And a lot more recently, in fact, we announced a transaction, a new investment this morning. We are partnering on a 50-50 percent basis with Solvang, the Norwegian specialist in the LPG, ammonia, and petchem space. So we've created a 50-50 partnership with them to initially own their contracted fleet of VLGCs, but there's very much an ambition to grow across the clean gas space. So that's LPG, ammonia, ethane, and CO2. And then, thanks for having me again.
Boring money is always good.
we hope, yeah.
Hopefully. Andy Hampson, I'm CEO of the Tufton Group, and I'm also CEO of Stainless Tankers, a company listed here on the Oslo Exchange. Tufton is an investment management company focusing on the maritime industry. We've been around now for 40 years, which I think makes us one of the longer lasting players in this game. Over the last 15 years or so, we have focused very much on individual assets and building different fleets, which is interesting in today's conversation as to whether or not assets are where one should be, but I'm sure we'll come on to that. We currently own about 45 ships, and we manage just under $1 billion of total capital that we invest, and that's in private managed accounts as well as the public vehicle on the Oslo Exchange and a public vehicle listed on the London Exchange.
Very good afternoon to everyone. My name is John Su from Erasmus Ship Invest Group. Very happy to be back to Capital Link and also back to Nor Shipping. Our company is a ship owning and management identity, and with different offices around Greece, Athens, Japan, Singapore, China, Vietnam, etc. So as a ship owning and management vehicle, at the moment we are owning around 50 ships and under our own management. So widely spread from dry bulk to small gas carriers, and also a few container feeder vessels and MPP ships, etc. So very happy to be here to share some thoughts and learn something new. Thank you.
Thank you all. Well, as we often hear at these gatherings, the shipping industry does well in times of chaos and disruption. And we certainly had plenty of that over the past few years, several years actually. For the past few years, many shipping companies have been doing quite well and generating a lot of cash, paying down debt, paying dividends to their shareholders. But as it looks, the chaos is not going to end anytime soon, in large part because of the administration in the United States, but other factors building in too. As many panels have talked about earlier today, there are still, you know, tariff and trade tensions. There's economic tensions around the globe. There's wars and conflicts taking place. And so as we start the panel discussion today, I think the place to begin is, as an overall general question, why do people invest in shipping? And is this a good time to invest in shipping? Are you bullish, bearish, or are you in a holding pattern when it comes to investing in the industry generally? So we'll just start with Christian and work our way down.
I guess the short answer is that shipping doesn't correlate with the usual other asset classes, and that's certainly a good thing. And the different segments in shipping also don't correlate a lot with each other, as we all see today. So I think there is tremendous opportunity basically all the time, and it is interesting. But to what you just said on geopolitical turmoil, so I can really understand if people decide for themselves it's better a time to not invest and sit on your hands. But I would make, from our perspective, the exceptions that we do continue to invest when the investments or the ships are backed up by substantial cash flows. So you have charters, medium to long term, or you are investing in structural growth markets, ideally coupled with no adequate supply. Give an example, it's what we're doing for the first one, what we're doing container ships is we're still buying, we're still ordering new buildings, but against long-term employment or long-term charters, which essentially de-risks the investment quite fast and also gives you a quite good view on the residual value, which is not going to be high anymore. And on structural growth, for us, you may have heard that MPC Capital has recently pivoted into offshore wind, and we did that by ordering smaller service and survey vessels, which is exactly that, no adequate supply and structurally a lot of growth in that market.
Yeah, maybe just to add and to build on what you said, Christian, two additional points. So the first one is really around cycles and how we look at cycles. I mean, ultimately, we take a life of asset perspective when investing in shipping, as we do when investing across all other asset classes and all other infrastructure segments. Which means that, you know, if you're investing during times where asset values and asset prices are higher, we need contract backlogs in order to justify the higher entry price. And that's sort of how we get comfortable. The other element here is that during times of crisis, there are also opportunities. So if you've got the right partner that is agile, that can identify interesting opportunities during more difficult times, that can pay off longer term. So in other words, it goes back to what I was saying at you know, the start during my introduction. Ultimately, we're sort of on the more boring end, and we take long-term views, and we're a long-term investor. And I think more broadly, shipping very much remains mission critical. If you look at, for example, the gas shipping space or energy shipping more broadly, energy, and you know, if we take LNG or LPG as examples, is produced in parts of the world that doesn't necessarily, you know, need all of the production, and there is tremendous demand in, for example, in Asian markets. So the outlook for seaborne transportation of LNG, LPG is strong, and there is growing demand, irrespective of where you are in the cycle. So we try to identify these mega trends that are not going to go away from one day to the next. And that's an important part of our investment strategy.
Hi, just a few comments. I think for those of us who understand the maritime world and understand investing in the maritime world, you know, yes, I totally agree that periods of turmoil, be it geopolitical, natural events, wars, etc., are usually beneficial for shipping. The problem is not all of us understand investing in shipping, and the vast majority of the world invests into other things. And our job at Tufton over the last 20 years or so has been trying to convince institutional investors, pension funds and the like, that the maritime industry is worthwhile investing in. Why go into shipping rather than a nursing home in Surrey? You know, the world is the investor's oyster. You know, why should they go into maritime? And I think that we as an industry have to try and tidy up that industry as much as we can in order to make it attractive. I don't know if any of you have ever tried explaining a dress commission to an institutional investor. It's a bloody hard sell, I can tell you. But I think as long as we've got, if you like, a slightly leaky vehicle, if you'll excuse the pun, there's a lot of money leaks out of this industry in various commissions and various pockets all over the place. And that I think we need to tidy that up to actually make shipping more attractive to mainstream institutional money.
I think something certain is that, as ancient Greek wisdom says, that as long as the planet is covered by the oceans, so shipping remains. So as long as shipping remains, I think there's no doubt we will all be in the business. Well, I think on the other hand, the charming part of shipping is that almost everyone has their own thoughts and very much diversities about the market trend. That makes the decision making quite different from one to the other, right? And if we talk about Capesize nowadays, if you order $7 to $8 million in Japanese yard, some people will say, oh, very expensive, it's insane. Some people will say, it's super cheap, it's still worthwhile. So at lunchtime, I met a fellow friend who sold a container ship to us recently. So honestly, it's very difficult to judge who is doing the wise things, probably both of us. So he had just gone through a super cycle, which made millions of dollar returns on the ship that he already owned last few years. Well, why we buy? We still feel that there's still a very firm perspective for container feeder market. So that's, I think that could be very interesting, that all the diversities remain. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. So Andrew touched on it, and it's been reported, some other investors were saying this earlier today too, that the best thing to do right now with your money in the shipping sector is to buy stocks and not ships. And so I'm just wondering, we can do this quickly, but if you all have views on that, maybe we'll just start at the other end of the panel. John, if you want to just give us your views on what you think regarding whether you should be investing in stocks or buying vessels.
From Erasmus Group side, we have been always trying to grow. So of course, grow means at the same time we are trying to be not careless, trying to be more, more selective, because if we look at today's big picture, of course, everyone's saying that a lot of uncertainties. In my personal opinion, I think there are uncertainties. Well, same time, there are some more certainties coming as well. So I think overall, we are trying to move more firmly on the things that are certain. I try to be cautious on the things uncertain, at least in our eyes. So last year, for example, we snapped up quite a few gas vessels. Well, this year we are very, very busy for box vessels. So maybe I think it's depend on how long the lifespan of the ships and the investment and return in short, medium or long terms. But I think overall, in our philosophy is that the earnings and asset value should match. Otherwise, we will not do it only because from concept or technology part, how beautiful it could be. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. So we're certain there's uncertainty. I think just from a straight theoretical point of view, if we've got, as we have today, a lot of the public companies trading at a steep discount to NAV, you're better to buy the stocks than you are to buy the ships. But then that begs the question, are you an investor who has that opportunity? I mean, I dare say, Christian, you maybe can't buy the stocks because your fund maybe doesn't allow you to do so. So,
correct. I mean, unless we take the company private.
Unless you take the company private, then you can do that. So that means taking the whole company in effect, or at least being able to manage it. So again, it depends upon what type of investor you are. If you're of a trading nature, then yes, you buy some of the stocks, much cheaper way to the assets. But as I say, it's not everybody's set up to do that. So you've got to look. I mean, you know, why just restrict it to assets or equities? You know, how about debt? You know, how about the tech side of it? How about the VC side of it? I mean, there's many different aspects and different areas where somebody interested in the maritime sector can invest. But most times it's determined, at least for us who are handling outside money, it's determined by the type of investor you have, what their risk return perspective is. And that's what determines, as you say, your boring money is actually very interesting money, really, at the end of the day, because that's what's going to see us through the next decade or so.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So just in terms of our mandate, just to be very clear, our mandate is to make private investments, as I said, into assets or companies. That doesn't mean that we can't look at a listed equity and ultimately take companies private. That is very much part of our toolkits. And we actually did that with GasTalk back in 2021 when we thought the listed equity was mispriced. And that created an opportunity for us to come in at what we thought was a decent entry price. In other cases, like, for example, the transaction that we announced this morning, that was, you know, with Solvang, that is a completely private, bilaterally negotiated transaction. So both are part of our toolkit, and I don't necessarily think that, you need to follow a huge number of different sort of stocks. We are very sort of focused on certain niches, and there's only a handful of companies in the shipping space that could be a fit for our mandate. As I said, we look for longer term contracts, we look for downside protection. A lot of the listed universe is actually fairly spot focused, and that is not really in scope for us, which makes our job easier.
I'll probably say it depends on the sector you're looking at. In containers, the market has evolved into a different stage right now, that the liner companies, which themselves made a lot of money, are not really dependent, especially in the larger sizes, on the tonnage providers anymore. And you need to have a more strategic relationship with them, which is difficult if you go out and buy one or two container ships and then try to put that on a long-term charter with a liner company if the market maybe corrects a bit in future, or on top of it trying to negotiate a retrofit or anything like that. Yeah. Because that's what we have been doing, so I would recommend to buy our stock. But yeah, the reality is that we have, for example, with Maersk Line, a significant retrofit program which involves many ships. And if you want to discuss, and if you want to I think work on these things, you need to have certain size, which is difficult, as I said, if you do that with one or two ships only.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you. It's very interesting. I think before we get into the specific sectors, let's just spend a second or two on energy transition, because it's like kind of a big elephant in the room, and the cost that'll be associated with this. The IMO earlier this year came out with a draft of its net zero 2050 framework, although it's not been approved yet. And a lot of companies obviously have seen this coming for a while and have started to adjust with the vessels that they're buying and when they're putting in orders. Obviously there's risks and rewards to everything, particularly a Titanic change like this. And I'm just wondering how you all are approaching this with respect to your companies and your investments and what you think other people should do. So I don't know, why do we start, Christian, if you want to start?
Yeah, sure. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of uncertainty that remains. Yes, the IMO rules provide a little bit more clarity, but I suppose the big questions around which fuels are going to ultimately win the race are still very much unanswered and are still open.
So you're putting in an order for questions. a large number of ships. What are you thinking? I mean, how are you approaching this, and how does that affect order?
For us, it comes down to a couple of points. So one is having the right partner that is agile and can help us make decisions. Ultimately, we're not the shipping experts. We work with people that know the space infinitely better than we do, and have, more importantly, worked through a number of cycles historically. So I think good examples are when we were invested in GasLog, we made a number of decisions to sell older tonnage and high grade the fleet to essentially make it younger and more efficient. Certainly a very agile partner that knew what they were doing. Same applies to our most recent investment, our partnership with Solvang. If you look at what they've been doing over many decades, they've always taken a leadership role when it comes to sustainability. For example, being at the forefront of onboard carbon capture, just as an example. The other aspect here, and this is perhaps less relevant for ship owners and operators, but as an infrastructure fund, we're also able to invest in fuel production. So the energy transition actually creates significant opportunity. One example is our investment in a biogas or RNG producer, depending on which side of the Atlantic you're from. The company is called Vanguard Renewables. They sit in the US, in the Boston area, and they've taken a lead role in producing biogas, RNG. And we're seeing substantial demand coming out of the maritime industry for longer term offtake agreements. So that is the other sort of aspect for us, the other opportunity that the transition creates.
Andrew?
I think we feel at Tufton that the LNG is clearly becoming the transition fuel, and I think that makes for some safe longer term investments. Looking at alternative fuels, I mean, we wouldn't order a ship today, I think, with alternative fueled engines for just now. I think there's too much risk. I think, at least for my first time in my career in shipping, I think we may have a situation where you could potentially end up with a redundant asset in 10 to 15 years' time, and with a few exceptions. I can't think of many of those in the past, maybe the old oboes or maybe the old reefers or something of that nature. But, you do potentially end up today, you could make investment decisions that landed you with a redundant asset in 10 to 15 years' time. And that's not a particularly good place. It's not a particularly good place to be in. I think the problem, and again, this comes back not just to the investor, but also to the industry, the real problem that we've got at the moment in trying to get the capital for this massive new investment that's needed for next generation of ships is that the charterers aren't there to provide the length of charters that are necessary to de-risk the projects enough for the investors to come in. So you're always going to be left with this be it a 7-year, 10-year, 12-year, whatever it is, residual risk question. And I think if you can solve that issue, if you can solve that risk, then you go a long way to making the capital available for what we need as an industry.
Okay. So actually, let me just, Christian, I think you at MPC actually ordered some dual fuel ships that go that use methanol, correct?
Yes, and we have actually done what you just mentioned, Andrew. It's for us, as you said also as well, Christian, it's more an opportunity than a threat, and we use that definitely to our advantage on the existing ships, on the ships which are on the water as of now. It's the retrofits, the collaboration with the charterers, which definitely has changed significantly in light of decarbonization and lower consumption, lower emissions, because they are co-investing in our ships, something at least in my years into shipping, I've never seen that before. And on the new building side, we have exactly done what Andy was mentioning. We have put long-term charters on the ships. So we off-ordered dual-fuel methanol ships, and they actually provide, the dual-fuel capability actually does provide us with a long-term employment. We have done 7 years with an operator in Europe. We have done 15 years charters, and we have done 15 years with inflation adjustment clauses. So we are sure that, you know, when you look at 15 years, a lot can happen, obviously, on the OPEC side. And the ships will be de-risked far ahead of that 15-year period. And if you can then back up the charters by the cargoes, which we brought in as an additional layer of safety here, then that's for us a great opportunity and something where we actually have to start as an industry to get these things going. And if we partner up with the right counterparties here, it definitely does work.
That's very interesting. John, how are you approaching this with your investments in your companies and how you see this, where we are right now in the transition cycle? How are you taking the approach?
Thank you, Andoni. That's very hot topic, certainly, on the alternative fuel things. For Erasmus, for our company case, we remain relatively conservative. And so far, we are not touching any part of the dual fuel. We remain a different voice here in the panel as well. So. And instead, we try to say what's going on there, but by also try to managing the risk point of view, we are trying to remain still different from a public company, because anyway we are fully private owned, so decision making is quite fast, and it's no bothering of let's say any. Okay, we care, of course, the public image and also environmental protection. We support that, and we also follow what our charters, customers' preference and demand. But to these alternative fuel things, we remain conventional at the moment. Well, by doing that, instead, we still have more than a dozen of ships on order under construction to be delivered, but only out of Japan. We don't have a second country in the planet where we build our ships. And then also on the segments, we try to go smaller category instead of being big one. Of course, we appreciate the fact that bigger vessels, certainly they have much more needs for being more pioneer category to be more competitive and also being technology advanced. So that's why we remain in relatively small segments. We hope that this can be the last impact segment as well. So instead, we honestly, I feel the geopolitical risks and other things probably prevail more than the technology at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you. Okay, so let's spend maybe the remainder of our time talking about segments within the industry. And I guess the, you know, obviously, the people here know that there's a big difference. I don't think maybe many people who aren't familiar with shipping investments understand that, but there are obviously a big difference between the segments. And why don't we start, maybe we start with Andrew. You know, where you think, you know, which segments are the hottest right now? Where would you put your money? What are you bullish on over now and over the next, you know, few years? And we can just sort of take that question around.
Just the question I never want to answer. I mean, we're not into sector picking. I think in the asset classes, the way we look at the market is looking very much at the value proposition. We look at asset pricing in terms of replacement cost and in terms of where we are historically versus replacement cost. Okay. There's empirical evidence that shows over the long term assets trend back on a secondhand basis to trade at depreciated replacement cost. So good asset play opportunities exist when you're trading well below price to depreciated replacement cost, and you sell them when they trade above. That's how we've made money for our investors over the last 15 years. I think it's a lot trickier today. The prices are not as depressed as one might think they should be, and so some of that correlation seems to be gone. So I think, again, I'd go back to, rather than just saying which sector to be in, to actually work out what is right for the investor base that you have. And I think as Christian is saying, that, you know, there is a move now more towards trying to view shipping as a bit of infrastructure, therefore looking at longer term contractual business. And I think the longer term contractual business therefore naturally leads you through to gas as an obvious, and container ships, I think, as obvious areas to be. But there will be, and there will remain, opportunistic plays across all of the different sectors. I'm not really going to be drawn in, you know, should I be buying a geared Handymax today or, you know, or not. It just depends. Depends on the contract position of the ship, on the condition of the ship, where the ship is, so many different things. But we're definitely there for opportunistic plays if we believe it's right. And I think it's important as an investment fund or as an investment manager to be totally sector agnostic. I mean, most shipping companies concentrate on what they're good at, and that's running a particular type or a few types of ships. That's what they're going to invest in. I mean, it's fairly obvious. I think if you're looking at it from an investment management point of view, you've got to ride through the cycles. You've got to be able to get out. You've got to get to the finish line to get your 8% on average return. And if you're going to do that, you have to get out of one sector and get into another. So I think the main message I would say is that you need to be nimble enough to actually move around once you've decided where to get into.
Exactly. So actually a nice lead-in, Christian. You made an investment with Christian Snethos. You made an investment in the gas sector, and so there must be, maybe you could share with us the reasons why you thought that was the sector to go in. We've discussed a little bit, but maybe you want to build out on that, why you thought that was the place.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, ultimately it comes back to, you know, our investment strategy and sort of always going back to basics. You know, what are the sort of the key pillars, right? So the key pillars of this new joint venture with Solvang were maybe three or fourfold. So one is the macro. We did a lot of work on the macro for LPG. This is the commodity. And ultimately got very comfortable that there is a robust story there. I mean, ultimately LPG is used as a cleaner and a cheaper fuel in industrial processes. Sure. And it is also used as a much cleaner fuel in domestic applications, in the residential space. And that is a sort of a mega trend that is not gonna change. So that was a key pillar of our investment case. We do come from an energy background. The fund that I sit in was actually acquired by BlackRock in 2017 from another investment house called First Reserve, which some of you here may know. And First Reserve was and still is an energy specialist. So we naturally gravitate more towards the energy and the gas space. And that's how we were able to build conviction in the LPG space. That's one. Then two, the contractual profile. By that I mean not just duration, but also quality of the counterparties. So you put those two together, we were able to construct an investment case where essentially it was very, very hard for us to lose our shirt on the investment, because assuming that the contracts pay out, we're getting more or less our capital back. That is critical, and that is frankly a foundation of most of our investments across any sector, not just the maritime space. That's two. And then the third key pillar is really the quality of the operating partner, the operating track record, the reputation. If you put all of that together, that creates something unique and something special. I think it's relatively easy if we go back to basics. In shipping, if you've got the capital, most people can go to the shipyard and order a number of ships. In order for shipping to work for us as an institutional investor, these ingredients need to come together to be able to create something that is differentiated and fits our mandate. Mm-hmm. And we found that in the case of Solvang and the joint venture that we created.
That's great. Christian, container shipping seems to be the sector that you're focused on, but you've also made some investments in other sectors too.
So yeah, I think in container shipping, talking to people outside of the room here, I completely understand why people are scared of the order book, look at tariffs and all the things which have been discussed here earlier today. But the reality is that if you dig a bit deeper, you'll find that more than 1,000 ships in that sector are already above 20 years of age. So there is significant replacement need. And then specifically that sector, talking about feeder container ships, that's the oldest that ever been. 30% of the sector is actually in that age already. And there is no order book, almost no order book in that sector. So there is significant replacement demand. And if you then can find proper employment against these ships, as I mentioned before, I still think it's a very good opportunity to be in. But again, it requires discipline, and it requires to have cash flow and charters in place before actually doing something there. On the offshore wind market, I mentioned earlier, it's a structural growth market for us. And we have a situation here that these offshore wind parks what we found on the service and survey level are being serviced by ships which are built in the 70s or 80s and former fishing vessels which have been transformed into ships which actually operate in these parks. And that is not safe, for sure not, and that's not sustainable either. And there is at least in our book, there is significant demand for having ships which are able to be operated really safe, meaning having DP2, for example, or being operated on methanol, but smaller engines. And if you can actually provide these kind of ships, there is significant demand for these kind of things. It needs to have a bit of conviction on the market. I completely understand that. But if you look at different infrastructure markets, and if you look at markets overall, usually the US are the biggest market. And if you look at public equities, public fixed income, etc., the US market is always 2 to 4 times bigger than the European market. But on the infrastructure side, it's pretty much the same size in Europe as well as in the US. And we think there's a tremendous potential here in Europe if you are investing in assets which are used by things which are backed up by the governments. And offshore wind for sure in Europe is backed up by all the governments. Mm-hmm. And there is a long pipeline.
John, you can round out this discussion and our panel. Give us your views on which sectors you're focused on and where you think the future is.
Yeah, thank you. I saw just 1 minute left now, so perfect timing now. So as I said earlier, at the moment, particular moment of this year, we are pretty firm on buying more container vessels, probably, feeder size, 2,000 TU plus minus. And we try to buy from MPC as well. So in the past, recently. So and also... MPP, multi-purpose vessels, probably. So, of course, the reason behind sometimes is because of certainly supply-demand techniques. The other side, of course, as said earlier, the earnings matters. So it's all dependent on the support of earnings. So one day, later this year or next year, if dry bulk, there's a kind of a strong earning support or the value changes, certainly we will be back on the dry as well. Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much. I think that does it for our time. So I'd like to thank you all very much. I thought it was a very interesting discussion. And thank you all for your kind attention. So I appreciate that.